is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the NSPS Radio Hour today. We're having a nice little snow day here where we are. Not too horrible, but one of my guests is in snow, and we'll hear about that later. But I'm glad everybody's able to join us today. We're going to have what I believe is going to be a very interesting conversation, and one that is long overdue with regard to where we're headed in our profession and what our perception is internally as well as externally and what we need to do about that. So with that, I'm going to welcome my guest to the show today. Jeff Lucas is with me. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Kurt. Glad to be here.
You've recovered from the major ice storm.
Yeah, we had 2 inches and shut down the city, but we're back in play now.
And Gary Kent is with us. Are you in Indianapolis today, Gary?
Yes, I am, Kurt, and glad to be on today.
Thank you. And Bruce Blair is with us from New Jersey, and he probably just came in from shoveling that first 5 or 6 inches of snow.
You better believe it.
Thank you all for being with me. I think everybody recognizes your names from having attended workshops you've done or maybe read something you have written. All of these three gentlemen are very well informed about our profession of professional surveyors. And we want to have a conversation today. Maybe I should introduce this as the beginning of a dialogue that we hope will take place. And it's sort of framed, and I'm not sure whether all the credit goes to Jeff or Jeff and Gary or Jeff and Gary and Bruce and maybe other people about changing the narrative about surveying internally and externally and the question of how do we do that. And one of the reasons that actually Jeff had mentioned was something our friend Dave Doyle said a while back about how soon it's going to be so anybody with a GPS unit will be an expert measurer. And sometimes surveyors tend to look at ourselves as that's our claim to fame, and that, I think, is part of why we need to change the narrative. So with that, Jeff, maybe I'll get you to lead off, and I don't think any of you need any introduction, but if you want to introduce yourselves as we move forward, that's fine. But, Jeff, why don't you start the conversation and talk a little bit about the premise of what we're trying to do today.
Okay, I just will say one thing. David Doyle, in that article he wrote back this past summer, said not just a GPS unit, but anything resembling a smartphone. You'll be able to get sub-meter to maybe 10 centimeters of accuracy, real time. So, but as you mentioned, Kurt, I was in Indiana, had the pleasure of going to the Indiana conference a couple of weeks ago. Gary and I sat down and had some conversations. One of those conversations was about what you mentioned, the narrative, and how we have basically as a profession, we have somewhat of a negative narrative going. And one thing that I've heard my entire career, and I know all you guys have as well, is the constant lament that nobody knows what we do. Nobody knows how we do it. We're misunderstood. We need to. So why can't we try to change that narrative? And I mentioned to you, Kurt, you mentioned we talked earlier, I guess, about a little bit about politics. And in today's political environment, really, it doesn't. Perception is reality. It doesn't matter what the real truth is. If we're perceived in a negative light, then we're negative people. But if we're perceived in a positive light, it doesn't really matter what the truth is. It's perception. So how do we change that narrative is the original question that Gary and I had.
Well, I don't know if maybe Gary or Bruce want to give a little comment on that before we get too deeply into the discussion as well. I don't know. Bruce, what are your thoughts?
Well, you're absolutely right that people have no concept of what we do. And I tell people I am a land surveyor. Many, many times they say to me, oh, so you work with bushes and shrubbery and you put in sidewalks and so on. They don't know the difference between a land surveyor and a landscaper. And that's indicative of the lack of association and connection that we have with the public. And it's something that we have to deal with all the time.
Yeah, and Gary, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting to me, just a couple thoughts on this. One of them is that I tend to separate this stuff. I guess we can sweep all the other geomatic stuff off the table. We're talking about boundaries here today, boundary work. And I would also kind of bifurcate that into two parts, and that is on land title surveys. I think the things that we're talking about are not as big of a concern because we've got a title company and we've got attorneys and, you know, everybody's kind of going in the same direction. And if there are issues that come up, they're either going to get resolved to everyone's satisfaction or the deal, you know, something's going to go happen with the deal. I think the kind of where we're at talking today is just a boundary survey, you know, generic boundary surveying where we're dealing with, two property owners or multiple property owners. And I think that's the narrative today. The other thing I think of, and I thought of this when Jeff was talking, and that is that, and probably none of you, I don't know, Bruce, you may remember this, and Kurt, you probably do, or at least aware of this, that years ago, ACSM commissioned a survey, I suppose, back, this is probably, 25 years ago, on the perception of the surveyor out in our target audience, you know, in the users of the consumers of surveyors, which was attorneys and title companies and those sorts of folks. And the interesting thing that came back was that they actually had a better perception of surveyors than what surveyors had of themselves. And, there was much time and effort spent talking about what the heck that meant. But I think it plays into all of this. And if we had the conversation a little bit earlier today about, you know, changing the narrative within the surveying profession is just as important as, and probably the beginning point for changing the narrative outside our profession.
It's interesting you were talking about that survey, and we always have to be careful when we use the word survey.
Mr. Gallup will sue us.
Well, we have members who get angry when we talk about Survey Monkey because it's derogatory to surveyors. Which is kind of interesting, I think. But again, it's all part of the perception. But that particular one you were talking about, Gary, I think most of the audience knows John Politiello. John is our government affairs, or his company is our government affairs firm. And most people probably know that John worked for ACSM back in those days and started the first internal program that ACSM had. He and I were talking about that very survey not too long ago, Gary. And I think he still has the results somewhere, which is kind of interesting that here we are 25 years later, or whatever the number is, talking about this issue again. And I think that's maybe the genesis of this whole conversation is that it seems to me among the three of you and some other folks that you've had some conversations with, some of them couldn't be with us today, and maybe three at a time is enough on the show. I don't know. But that whole idea that we talk a lot, but what do we actually do? And here we are once again on the precipice of something happening that we won't like. So now it's time to actually do something. And maybe back to Jeff now, that maybe that's a good way to start the next part of the discussion, Jeff.
Yeah, I know we're coming up on a break here in just a second, but I will make it kind of quick. I just wanted to add to Gary's comments about context. You know, the context we're talking in here is the reason that land surveyors are licensed to begin with, our exclusive niche within the overall geospatial community, and that license and dealing with property issues is what puts us in direct contact with the general public, more so than possibly engineers or architects come into contact with the general public. And from my own perspective, from my own research, it's probably why land surveyors end up in court more often than engineers and architects is because we are dealing with a precious commodity, and it's very important. And I put out there the idea that what would happen to the land surveying, traditional land surveying, if we were to be deregulated, which is a real possibility.
Right, and you know, one of the things we talked about this a little bit in our former conversation, but you were talking about our position or our communication with the general public, and one of the things I said at that point was, you know, to me, that drew me to the profession because what I was doing had a direct impact on people, and you know, we compare ourselves to engineers, architects, whatever, and when we're dealing with people's property, it's personal. Sometimes not so much with the other design professionals because they're oftentimes using data provided by people like us to do something on the land, but we're dealing with that really, really personal side of land ownership and where those land ownership is demarcated between people. And to me, that's the beauty of it. That's one of the things that drew me to it. Sometimes it seems as though our folks want to pull away from that a little bit and not be as personally involved, if that's the right terminology. But getting to your deregulation side of things, I don't know if maybe Bruce has a comment about that. You're right, Jeff. We're maybe 2 minutes away from break. So, Bruce, I don't know if you have a thought about the whole deregulation thing. Maybe we can cover that before the break.
Well, in the three states I'm licensed in, when you boil everything down, you look at the regulations, you look at the administrative code, the statutes, and so on, I am charged with placing my opinion on the ground as to where those boundary lines are. I don't know anybody else that has that opportunity or that responsibility.
That's very true. And Gary, any thoughts?
Yeah, we talked about this earlier too, and it's an interesting quandary that we end up in. And I've been talking about this in my seminars over the last year or so. This idea of and Jeff certainly is an attorney, and he knows this too. We talked about this, the where and the what. You know, the surveyor is charged with the where. Where is that boundary on the line? And the law is what does that mean? You know, what does that represent? And what I like to say is the law aspect of that is what does that line represent with respect to ownership in particular? So I think one place that surveyors get nervous talking about some of this stuff and what we're going to be going after the break is the idea of, well, you know, gosh, I can't talk about ownership. Well, yeah, actually, that is the purview of the law, but we can talk about where lines are, and I think a very important point of being able to explain to people ownership and written title and, you know, versus ownership and what all that stuff means and why we have to be familiar with things like unwritten rights and... And all
Let's
of
take that
stuff.
Into the break, Gary, because we're right on the break. Yeah. We'll get that when we come back.
All right.
Okay, folks, we have a grand prize winner in the Schonstedt Great Locator Giveaway of 2013. Stand by while we find out which of the two prizes, the Caribbean Cruise for two or the $5,000 in cash, the winner will select. We'll be working out the rest of the details this week, so tune in next Monday for the official announcement and more information about the lucky winner. Meanwhile, we're at www.schonstedt.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with Gary Kent, Jeff Lucas, and Bruce Blair today, having a conversation that we think is important and is important to our profession, no doubt about that. And before we went to break, Gary, you were talking about that whole ownership question thing and where lines are and our responsibilities related to those. So maybe you want to follow up on that, and then we'll get some thoughts from Jeff and Bruce.
Yeah, I might just kind of finish that thread, and I know that, and certainly Jeff has heard it, and we've all heard it, you know, that one of the problems is that so many surveyors, well, I can't deal in ownership, you know, I can, here's where the line is, sorry it falls, you know, in your neighbor's garden, or sorry it falls inside your house, you know, have a nice day, but call, you know, just call an attorney. And I think what we're talking about is, yeah, surveyor's ability is limited to being able to resolve things like that. However, we can be part of the solution rather than just throwing this stuff out there, or you know, doing a survey and basically saying, you know, well, sorry about that. Go call your attorney. That we do have license to be. To engage with the owner, to engage with the neighbors, and try and help fix these things or prevent them from becoming a problem in the first place, I think.
Yeah, maybe as you were saying, it occurred to me that perhaps part of the discussion is beyond, well, the line is over here in your neighbor's turnip patch, and here's why that's where I show it, rather than just there it is.
Yeah, right.
And so I don't know, Jeff, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have several thoughts along this line. Just to reiterate just a little bit what Gary said, we are the only reason land surveyors are licensed is to protect the public. And what do we protect about the public? We're supposed to be protecting their property rights. And it is a two-part question. The legal title question is, what is your property? The factual question, which is completely within the surveyor's purview to render an opinion on, is given what it is, where is it located on the ground? But as we discussed earlier, and Gary brought up a great point, let's, in order to try to change the narrative of what's going on here, let's get out of this mindset of all we can do is, you know, slap some lines on the ground and call it a day. We need to change the discussion completely. And as Gary said earlier, I don't care how you got to where you think the line is, before we upset the apple cart, before we upset the status quo, sit down and have a discussion with the people involved and see if there isn't some kind of a possible resolution before we create the problem, which creates the public relations problems that we have. I wrote a book about the pin cushion. Some surveyors say pin cushion, schmin cushion. Jeff, who cares about a pin cushion? Well, the problem with the pin cushion is it's a public relations nightmare for us. It gives the impression that to the general public, the general landowning public, that surveyors don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, it's even more than that, Jeff. As land prices increase, values increase, we start to really have difficulty with minuscule differences. We have land here in New Jersey that's $1 million an acre. You get into some of these cities that are developing, and you know they'll come to blows over an inch, a half an inch, and I've seen pin cushions that are much larger than that.
Very true, and you're right, and that's hard sometimes, Bruce, for folks. I know a lot of my career before coming to where I live now was in a more rural area where those kinds of discrepancies were not as critical, certainly not to the level of you know the money involved. But you're right, it is one of those situations where in many cases these days, and maybe in a broader geographic area than in the past, those kinds of questions do come up, and they're part of the issue.
Kurt, can I say something to that?
Yeah, sure, Jeff.
The only reason that question ever comes up is it comes up from a measurement mindset. The landowners have no idea that possibly they own that extra inch until the surveyor tells them that's a possibility. When in reality, if that's not where the boundary line has already been established on the ground, then it probably isn't their inch.
I got you. Yeah, and I think that kind of gets back to something else we were chatting about in our earlier conversations in terms of, and you alluded to this earlier, Jeff. When we're, as Gary pointed out, with the lines over in the turnip patch or whatever, engaging those people much earlier on in the process, and I think I'd mentioned one of the things I always like to do is find out what they think. You know, where do they think things are, or what's their opinion, even before I get started? Not necessarily that's going to sway my decision, but at least I need to know that as I go through and be prepared to deal with it, I guess, is the right question. And then I think what you're saying, Jeff, and I think what everybody's saying here is get a discussion going before the final verdict, so to speak.
I mean, when you look at the work that's been done on the ALTA ACSM surveys, I mean, Gary has spent years developing those and others with him. I've yet to have a closing that went forward. I mean, we've had some that have gone down the tube because of boundary issues. But most of the time and almost all of the surveys that I work on, those issues are resolved by discussion, by research, by further investigation before it ever becomes a problem.
Right, and I think that's I won't speak for you, Jeff, but I think that's where you were headed with what you were saying.
Well, yeah, and we talked about this earlier as well. I mean, there's a reason why Cooley kicked off the conversation with this concept of the surveyor's quasi-judicial function, but it's been carried down through the ages, through guys like Mulford, guys like Hodgman out of Michigan, and just not too long ago, some of Gary's mentors, Daryl Dean and John McIntyre. This idea that the surveyor has a quasi-judicial function is based in reality. That's because most survey decisions, as Dean and McIntyre said in their little treatise, most survey decisions become final decisions. Why is it that they become final decisions? Because nobody can challenge the surveyor on those issues. They don't have enough money to do it. And so if they're going to be final decisions, what we need to be doing is rendering well-reasoned opinions on the location question. Since we know, de facto, we're going to be the judge and jury on that decision.
How many times have you seen a survey with a triangle or a sliver or whatever, and it just says area in question, and nothing further is done on it because we don't want to take some steps to try and resolve it?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Bruce. And, you know, a lot of people will say that. I hear people say in seminars and such that, you know, that the end of my responsibility, I've identified the problem. And, you know, there's some truth in that, but that's the narrative we're trying to change. Because when the surveyor does that, it's like surveyors like to brag about how much more we know than attorneys about these issues, how much we know more than the judges about these issues, and yet we just throw that out there and say there's a problem, you know, and go have at it, instead of taking our knowledge and our experience and our education and helping them resolve the problem. You know, surveyors can't resolve it. Only the owners can resolve a title problem. But we're pretty, you know, we're pretty intelligent about this stuff. We can help them resolve those things.
And if all we can do, Gary, you and Bruce brought up great points here. But if all we can do is find people's problems, and you guys know this, if all we can do is find their problems, eventually we become the problem. We, the land surveying professional, we're the problem. And perception is reality. When the perception is surveyors are a problem, and what they do, their map of survey, I can go down and get a GIS map that is just as good. When that becomes the perception that a GIS map that I buy for $2.50 down at the county is just as good as a survey, traditional surveying is toast.
I just had a survey 3 months ago. Two 100-foot lots, and there was a disagreement on the common boundary of 14 and a half feet. I did the survey on the left. Another surveyor did the survey on the right. The two of us were able to work it out, and we reasoned with the two owners, and they resolved it. The owners resolved it by a boundary line agreement between the two, and it didn't go any further than that. Both lots have closed, and both have transferred title, and it's because the two of us sat down, shared our information, worked it out, and reported back to the attorneys and the title companies what the situation was, and this was the most reasonable resolution, and they bought it, and the closings took place.
Well, can I work on that, Kurt, for just a
sure.
second?
Sure. Yep, we've got a couple minutes. Yep.
Okay. And, Bruce, what if we could wipe the slate clean? And what if the perception of the land surveying profession is that's what we do? We solve your problems. You know, surveyors ensuring the American dream, and the American dream being land ownership, home ownership, and surveyors are part of what. Why do you hire a surveyor? They come out and tell you where your property lines are.
If you have a problem,
they help you resolve it. What if that was the perception of the general public?
We have two attorneys and two title companies right now that fully believe that.
That used to be the perception of land surveying back in Mulford's day. If you just read that little treatise of Mulford's, what was he doing? He wasn't an expert measurer. He was a mediator.
That's right.
He was helping people. He was all about evidence and helping people resolve their issues.
We're coming up on the break here, and it seems to me that based on our preliminary discussions going into this, maybe in our next couple of segments, a couple of things we could talk about. And one is, based on what you just said, Jeff, and I think we would all agree with that, there was a time in history where people looked at surveyors in a particular way that is obviously somewhat different than it is now. So how did we get from there to here? That's one thing we can talk about. And then ultimately, how do we change that? How do we make that narrative be what we want it to be? What's the responsibility of the profession there? What's the responsibility of the professional organization? And what are our personal responsibilities? So I think that's a good place for us to go when we come back from this next break.
Sounds good.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Okay, folks, we have a grand prize winner in the Schonstedt Great Locator Giveaway of 2013. Stand by while we find out which of the two prizes, the Caribbean Cruise for two or the $5,000 in cash, the winner will select. We'll be working out the rest of the details this week, so tune in next Monday for the official announcement and more information about the lucky winner. Meanwhile, we're at www.schonstedt.com.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com. the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everyone, with our guests today, Bruce Blair, Jeff Lucas, and Gary Kent. It's the time of the show each week where we do our question of the day with regard to a contest from our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes. Parker Davis Quick Stakes gives a gift certificate to the person who is the first to respond with the correct answer to Quick Stakes Contest at americaswebradio.com. So today the question is going to be, since perhaps Gary and Jeff may be a bit more known to a broader national audience than is Bruce, the question, Bruce, is where does Bruce Blair live?
I live in Hillsborough, New Jersey.
Hillsborough, New Jersey is the answer to today's question. And do you think that will have any impact on how people perceive your answers from here on out?
It'll give more credence to them.
I'm sure that it will. Perfect answer. Before we went to the break, we were talking about this idea of somehow having been transitioned from the old days of those people on Rushmore and perhaps much later in the history of the world, of surveyors being perceived as problem solvers to today perhaps being perceived as problem identifiers or maybe even creators. So I'm interested in your individual perspectives on how did we get from there to here as a maybe a way to figure out how to change it, and we can talk about that maybe in the next section. So I don't know. Let's start with Gary. What do you think, Gary? How did we get from what we all think things were in terms of perception about our profession to where we think it is now?
You know, that's a good question. And I had you asked me that prior to the last year or so, I think I would have been in a, probably not had a good answer for you. I know what Jeff thinks, and to an extent, I probably agree with him. And that is, I think, Brown and, of course, now Don Wilson and Walt Robillard have done the last number of versions of that book. But I think a very strict reading of Brown might lead people there. I don't think that's necessarily what Brown thought. It certainly wasn't what he thought at the end of his life. But I don't think that maybe he even intended on people interpreting his stuff that way. But if, you know, as surveyors are such technical people, you know, we like guidance. You know, Kurt and I, you and I have talked about this on the ALTA standards. You know, if the word doesn't, if the standard doesn't say exactly the right thing, then people like to, you know, punt and blame it on something else. And I think a very strict reading of Brown would lead people to say, well, all I can do is this and have a nice day. I'm out of here. Versus, you know, okay, I understand that maybe that's all you think you can do from a boundary standpoint, but it does not prevent you from, as Jeff said earlier, that's fine. How we got here, you know, I don't care how we got here. Let's be part of the solution.
I certainly would agree with you that in the ALTA-CSM situation, interpretations of what we have come up with and what is in the standards often turn out to be something we would never, ever have imagined anybody would have thought. There's no question about that. So I don't know. Bruce, what do you think?
Well, I think one of the things that has driven some improvement is the formation of the professional societies over the last 30, 40 years. Prior to that, we were in our caves and didn't talk to each other. I know in New Jersey, going back in the 50s and 60s, there were almost borders which you did not cross. If you were going to survey in a certain area, you knew so-and-so had that area locked down, and this guy set half-inch iron pins, and this fellow sent pinch pipes, and so on. But I think one of the benefits has been the formation of these societies, and most of them started around 50, 60 years ago. There's some that are much longer than that. But I think there's been more of a willingness to talk to each other, to work out differences in lines and history and so on. And I think that's been a big plus. So, you know, I commend those people that operate in those professional societies and donate, you know, hours and hours and hours of time. And I think that's where some of this, I don't want to use the word change, I don't want to use the word improvement, but some of the differences that we're looking at, ways to improve. Because as was said earlier, the purpose of a license is to protect, and it's this in every state, the health, safety, and welfare of the public. And that's what we're licensed to do.
Jeff? Well, when that idea of all we need to do is just, you know, stake the math and the deed and call it a day sort of arose, you know, back in the 1950s and 60s is my theory. There were two things happening in the United States of America at that time relative to land surveying. First of all, you had two types of surveyors. You had pure apprentice surveyors who knew just a little bit less than their mentors knew, and you had civil engineers, sometimes graduate civil engineers, who were surveying for whatever reason. And the personal story I tell on that is in 1956, and I'm dating myself now, the year I was born, my dad here in Alabama went and sat for the engineering exam. A few weeks later, he gets a letter from the board. He failed the engineering exam, but they gave him a survey license instead as a consolation prize. So, so we had two types of surveyors, and when that message comes down, all you have to do is just go measure and stake out. Those two types of surveyors that reached eager ears. Those two types of surveyors could do that. They could measure and they could map and they could do math. The other thing that was going on, and this is pre-federal rules, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and Federal Rules of Evidence. They weren't enacted until about 1973. It was either 73 or 75. So this is pre-rule America. The majority rule on expert witness testimony at that time was, and that just means a majority of the jurisdictions, I've never seen a statistic on how many states that was, but the majority rule was you couldn't give an opinion as an expert witness in court, even if you wanted to. So if you can't give an opinion, even if you wanted to give an opinion, if you can't give an opinion, how can your opinion be wrong? It can't be wrong. There was one other thing happening at that time, too. Privity of contract was probably a little more alive and well than it is today. You couldn't be sued unless you had a contract with someone. So those three things were happening. Well, time has gone by and things have changed, especially the Federal Rules of Evidence. Right now, the Federal Rules of Evidence say that it is no longer objectionable for an expert to give an opinion on the ultimate issue in the case. And 42 states, by my count, 42 states out of 50 have adopted the federal rules in some form or the other. So that's now the new majority opinion in the United States of America. So now when the expert goes to court, you not only might have to give your opinion, they might force you to give an opinion on the ultimate issue in the case. And the ultimate issue in a pure boundary dispute case is, it's a two-part question, what is the property? And the factual question is, where is it located? What the property is, it's the southwest quarter of the northeast quarter. The factual question, the land surveyor's question, to give an opinion on, which you may be required to do under oath, and if you don't have an opinion on this question, you won't testify. The factual question is, where on God's green earth is it located? So the paradigm has changed, but we haven't. We haven't updated ourselves to keep in step with the changes in the law.
And do you think that comes about through the through the process of our education, whether it be on the job training or through university programs, through the mentorship as we are going from fundamentals to licensure, what precipitated that change, do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm not an expert on what the various surveying schools are teaching the students. My sort of subjective view of this is we teach them a lot about technology. We teach them a lot about programs. We teach them how to do calculations. But I don't even know that there's a school out there. Maybe Gary knows. Maybe Purdue does. I don't even know that there's a school out there that teaches basic evidence and procedures.
New Jersey does.
Okay. From the fundamental reason we're licensed, evidence and procedures is far more important than measurements.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think all of the universities that offer a degree like that have to offer some coursework like that. But I think that because of changes going on in the university environment, because of some of the requirements or the requirements that especially some of the larger public universities have on who can teach, you've got some problems with finding qualified people to instruct on those particular types of issues. I certainly have seen that here at Purdue and at other places too, that you want to go help out, but you can't, because you're not qualified to, that ends up being a bit of a problem. I might comment on one of the things Jeff was talking about, and he and I have talked about this issue, and it's a funny one and a confusing one, I think, that goes back to some of the gist of what we've been talking about, and that is this idea of offering an opinion on the ultimate issue, and the ultimate issue is in my mind, typically, almost always in a boundary dispute, is not anything other than where is the property line, who owns what. And and depending on exactly how that gets couched, one attorney is going to object to a surveyor at least saying, well, I think it all hinges on how it gets couched. Because if I say, well, I think that he owns to here, they're going to object to my opinion as far as title. If I say I think the boundary line is here, then I think I'm fine under direct. I think under cross, they can ask me, why do you think it's there? And then it may get a little stickier, because I may say, well, because I think of acquiescence, and then I'm in trouble there. So
maybe
it's it's a very interesting dynamic that goes on that issue.
True. Well, let's go to our last break. Maybe we'll follow up on that a little bit, and then we'll talk about the path forward.
Okay, folks, we have a grand prize winner in the Schonstedt Great Locator Giveaway of 2013. Stand by while we find out which of the two prizes, the Caribbean Cruise for Two or the $5,000 in cash, the winner will select. We'll be working out the rest of the details this week, so tune in next Monday for the official announcement and more information about the lucky winner. Meanwhile, we're at www.schonstedt.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everyone, to our final segment today with our guests Bruce Blair, Gary Kent, and Jeff Lucas. We've been talking about I don't know if a paradigm shift is the right terminology here, but certainly a narrative shift in terms of the message we are conveying as a surveying profession and perhaps what that message should be moving forward. We've heard the mantra, if that's the correct terminology, professional surveyors ensuring the American dream, which I kind of like and welcome and appreciate Jeff having actually come up with that idea. And we've talked about how is it we're going to transition from what we seem to have in many cases become, which is I'm just a measurer, and since I measure better than you, then my spot 2 inches away is better than yours. How do we transition from that to the real professional attitude of, I'm here to help you folks with a problem. I'm here to help you figure out where we're headed and explain to you my thoughts on how I've gotten where I am to now and get your input and be part of the solution and perhaps even be that mediator. Then we've talked a little bit about how do we get here. Is it through a mentorship program that doesn't necessarily focus on that side of who we are? Is part of it because there just isn't time in a formal educational setting to include that, or even if there is time, do we have people who are able to come in and share that, people actually practitioners who are working every day to share that type of attitude? So as we're moving forward now, we want to spend the next 10 or 12 minutes talking about how do we make this happen? What's the grassroots effort that needs to occur? Is this something that's intended for an organization to do? Is it going to grow on its own? So I'm interested in your thoughts about that, and maybe, Jeff, you can start that conversation.
Okay. We've talked about already some of the resistance from the surveying community itself to this idea. One of the things I hear a lot is, well, I can't afford to spend that kind of time on this project. And that, again, in my opinion, is coming from a measurement background. If you go in with the mindset, how quickly can I get this done, because I have a very limited budget and I'm just budgeting how long it's going to take to go out there and make some measurements and drive some irons in the ground, then yeah, this new direction won't work for you. But that's a simple contract. That's a simple contract issue. We need to get the message out to not only the general public, but to the surveyors. And it needs to be a message that's going to stick. It needs to be something that's you can wrap your brain around. One of the examples I've talked to all three of you about is what the CPAs are doing now. I hear these little radio spots from the CPAs. It's their Feed the Pig campaign. And after listening to a couple radio spots, 30-second radio spots, I understand what the CPAs are all about. If I didn't know what a CPA was, I know that they help me to save money if I hire one of them or help me with investments. We need a simple message, and I tell surveyors all the time, our mantra moving forward should be maintaining the status quo. And if you're going to do anything to upset the status quo, and as we discussed earlier, that's when you stop. Step back, get a conference of the party, and bring them to the table. This is what surveyors do. We bring them to the table. We try to mediate a settlement over a possible problem that they have. And if they don't want to drink the water, you walk away. And that's also a contract issue. You have termination clauses in your contract. You terminate. This is the best project I'll ever do, Kurt. 90% of the work, get paid for 90% of the work, and never produce a thing. But this is a lot of this. We've got to change the narrative. Now, exactly how we change the narrative, I don't know.
Gary?
Yeah. I think that an awful lot of it is just is comfort level with encouraging surveyors to step outside their comfort zone. You know, I every time I do a program, I talk about people, persons, and I have certainly not statistically proven, but time and time again, I find that somewhere around 5 to 7% of the surveyors in the United States would self-categorize themselves as being a people person, which means the other 93 to 95% are not people persons, don't want to be engaging with people, and yet that's our, you know, that's the best thing we can be doing for our image, and also to to be a problem solver, is to get in there and help. So I think that's one thing, is to help people get a comfort level on something that's outside their comfort zone. And the other is to, I think, help them, give them kind of a template on, which Jeff just did to an extent, is how would you go about doing this? You know, well, you have a contract, and, you know, and here's what you're saying you're going to do, and if you reach this point, then things change, and you shift into a different mode. And, as Jeff said earlier, Cooley, I always go back to Cooley because I think he's probably most widely known, and I quote him every time I do a program, but certainly Cooley very, very emphatically talked about this issue, you know, surveyors acting in a quasi-judicial capacity to help work through these problems. So I think we just need to bring this back to the forefront and help surveyors get comfortable with the idea and comfortable with stepping out of where they're comfortable.
Bruce?
There's been a groundswell over the last 40 years, 30 years, with state societies, professional societies being formed. And then on top of that, about 10, 15 years ago, you started to see mandatory continuing education as the statutes state by state were modified and administrative code and so on. So that now it's a requirement. I think, Jeff, you threw out 42 states now have it, or
yeah,
mandatory, some sort of mandatory upgrade of knowledge, let's put it that way. And in 79 in New Jersey, 8 of us got together and formed the New Jersey Society, which right now has one of the largest conferences every year. Ours is coming up next week, where we'll have maybe 1,000 people, anywhere from 800 to 1,000 people. And if nothing else, they're learning by osmosis, the fact that they're there and they've got their feet in the water, and some of it, you know, manages to work its way up through their veins. That's not enough. We need national cooperation. We need to have programs developed that will train us in dispute mediation, in public speaking, in legal issues like contracts and so on. And that's where we have to go with this, or, as Jeff has said, we'll be relegated to the same position as the dodo bird. Because I was at my daughter's house this morning, and she showed me her cell phone, where she was tracking her husband because of the concern she had of the snow in his car from her cell phone. So don't tell me that we're going to be measurers for much longer.
That sounds like a dangerous precedent to have your wife be able to track you.
I was thinking the same thing.
I guess that maybe that works well for knowing where your crews are on any given day. I don't know, but
there are many firms that are tracking their crews by their cell phones, and you know, they do that, and it's, you know, well known that we're going to be charged rent or usage on state highways and federal highways based on the amount of driving that we do on those. So that's where the technology is going. We're not going to be technologists in the very, very near future.
We've got about 3 minutes left in the show today, maybe a little less than three. So I guess it's important for, at this point to point out that this is the beginning point of a conversation that needs to take place all across the country and among as many people as possible to address the issue and hopefully agree that there is an issue among professionals nationwide that we need to become I don't know if more outgoing is the right word, or more engaged, or at least better understand what makes us separate and what makes us special. And there's going to be a lot of questioning about that and where we should go. But as we discussed in our early conversations, that has to start somewhere. So I know that the three of you guys are very interested in moving forward in that direction and being part of that solution and helping to find the way, admitting as we're sitting in our different places today on the telephone that we're not really sure what the answer is exactly. We just know there needs to be one. So I want to thank you all for being with me today, and in the next couple of minutes, maybe each of you can make a bit of a closing statement, and we'll be off the air then.
Well, I'll start. We'll just me, Bruce, and Gary. How about that? I just wanted to say it's going to take more than us four, obviously. If we're going to affect some kind of major shift in the discussion, you mentioned paradigm shift earlier, Kurt, sea change, whatever, it's going to take more than the four of us. We're obviously going to have to, it might start with the four of us and some others like-minded, creating maybe a group within NSPS. Bruce mentioned earlier, you know, like a master survey program. And that comes along with a good housekeeping seal of approval on your survey. Something to change the narrative from all we can do is this to we can do anything really we want to, within the parameters that we have as land surveyors.
Bruce and Gary, we got about a minute.
We need to get active politically. We need to get active societally. And we need to do this. We cannot rest on our laurels.
Yeah, I think today is a really good start. And I said earlier, we all said earlier, Kurt, that this is the beginning of a dialogue. And you know, I'm hoping that this sticks and generates a lot of talk, and that we can get people interested in the concepts and move this concept along to where we can it can get traction and we have people deciding this is what we need to do.
Sounds great. Well, thanks again to all three of you for being with me today, and we'll further this discussion later on the show and try to get more people engaged. But thank you so much for being with me today.
Thanks, Kurt.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
Take care.
Thanks, Kurt.
All right. Bye-bye.
Are we all gone?
I'm still here, but I heard two hang-ups, so they may be gone, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll catch up later, Bruce.
Very good.
All right, bye.
Goodbye.